The first time I learned Eov was when I was in elementary school and preparing for the International Bible Contest, the Chidon Tanakh in Israel. I never learned Sefer Eov before, so my father, Rabbi David Eliach Shlita, suggested that we learn it together. It was an awesome experience, and it opened my eyes to the beauty of the words and concepts in the Sefer. I cherished those memories. It also was part of a lifelong learning relationship that I have with my father, till this very day. There is a special bond that forms between individuals who also learn together. The main idea in Sefer Eov is to seek an answer and discuss the question of divine justice. Is there justice in this world? Hashem created the world and is the animator of everything in it. He is omnipresent. He is everywhere and omnipotent, all-powerful. So can he let injustice happen? We look around us and we perceive injustice. Oftentimes, we see the just and the righteous suffer and the unjust succeed. Tzadik v'ra lo, rasha v'tov lo. Or to say it in a more popular way, why do bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people? The book of Eov is an enigma in Tanakh. There was no consensus among the religious commentators throughout the centuries about the time period of the protagonist or the existence of the protagonist. However, all agree in one form or another that this book of Tanakh is about our human struggle to define our relationship with Hashem, especially when we suffer or see others suffer. This Sefer is a discussion about personal alienation from God. What makes us feel exiled from God, distant, punished, alone, rejected? Who wrote the book of Eov? According to the Gemara and Baba Batra, Yudal Amud Bet, it was Moshe. But there are rabbinic opinions that set the author in events earlier and later. Some views state that Eov was non-Jewish. A very famous view is that Eov never existed. In the Gemara Baba Batra, Tetvav Amud Aleph, it states, Eov lo haya v'lo nivra, ela mashal haya. Eov never existed. His life is a parable. The Rambam, in Mora Nevuchim, section 3, chapter 22, strongly agrees with this view. It's a parallel, a parable, to present different solutions to the question of divine justice. Rav Haigaon, interpreted by Rav Hutner Zatzal, in Pachad Yitzchak, explains that Eov existed for the sake of teaching us this lesson. He was a living parable. He did exist. His existence and suffering was real, but solely to teach us an important lesson about divine justice, suffering, and personal trials. Reish Lakish in Bracious Rabba explains that Eov existed, but his suffering is fictitious. And Ibn Ezra proposes that Eov existed because his name is mentioned in Yecheskel, Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Yudalet, along with Noach and Daniel. In ancient Near Eastern biblical texts, non-biblical texts, excuse me, Eov is a given name. My mother experienced the Holocaust as a child and saw her and her shtetl's whole life shattered in 2 days. Thousands of her relatives and neighbors in the shtetl of Eshishok and its environs were rounded up, gunned down, slaughtered and murdered over Rosh Hashanah and Som Gedalia in September 1941. Her baby brother was strangled right before her eyes during an aktion just a little while later in Ghetto Radin. And after that, she and the remaining survivors of her family went running and hiding in pigsties in the forests for years. When they finally returned to their shtetl, her mother and her newborn baby were shot down and murdered as she was hiding behind them in the attic. Her mother's and baby brother's blood completely soaked her. Right after that, her father was arrested and taken to the Siberian Gulag, and her surviving older brother joined the partisans. She was alone at age 10. Her family, all her possessions, and she was alone. They were Job-like. In a post-Holocaust world, we can picture Job's ordeals. What is Eov's life? We know they can happen. The question then and now is why? Why do these things happen? Can we attempt to answer that question? Can we even dare to ask it? Are we allowed to? Avraham and Sdom asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaShofet Kol HaAretz Lo Yaseh Mishpat. Eov in the land of Utz in our Sefer. In Eicha, we ask the same thing. We ask it about people who are suffering through cancer, illness, tragedies, accidents, war. We are all asking the same question. What is the meaning of life? Is there justice in this world? In Perek Aleph, Eov begins with the story of a good and righteous man who has lost everything in a heartbeat. In Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, we learn that there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Eov, and he was Tam, V'yashar, V'yirei Elokim, V'sar Meira. Eov is described as sincere, upright, God-fearing, and shunning evil. A good person, all in all. And he was flourishing, both in a family way and economically. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, sheep, cattle, camels, donkeys. He's described as the wealthiest man in all the East. All his children would gather to feast on a regular basis and a regular rotation, following celebrations. And the next morning, Eov would summon his sons to purify themselves and sacrifice to God early on the next morning of their festivals, because he was worried they might have cursed God in their hearts. This was Eov's consistent practice. He would sacrifice because he was worried maybe his sons cursed God in their hearts. Next perek, we move to the heavenly scene. Sorry, in the same perek, Perek Aleph. We're moving to the heavenly scene, right? We had the earthly scene, and now we're in the heavenly scene. There's the celestial tribunal where Hashem is enthroned, and the Bnei HaElokim, the angels, are surrounding Hashem. And Hashem addresses the Satan, the adversary, one of God's angels, not an all-powerful angel, a servant, doing Hashem's bidding. According to Rashi, it was on Rosh Hashanah, when our fates for the year are decided. And it is when the Satan's job to be the kategor, the prosecutor, is very pronounced. Hashem prods the adversary, the Satan, to report on the world, and specifically on Eov, who is described by Hashem in the same way that Eov was described when Sefer Eov opens. Tam v'yashar yirei Elokim v'sar meira. This highlights the fact that Hashem as well sees Eov as sincere and upright and God-fearing and shunning evil. And God adds to this description by saying to the Satan, Hasamta libcha lavdi Eov, ki ein kamo ba'aretz, that Eov is a servant and there's no one like him in the land. This highlights Eov's status even in the eyes of God. But the Satan answers that Eov's fear of God is mercenary. Huh. Eov's not an average person. He is well off, and Eov fears God because God is paying him back with a wonderful family and monetary success. But if God will destroy everything Eov possesses, no doubt Eov will curse God to his face. So God responds by allowing Eov to be tested. God gives permission to the Satan to test Eov. Everything Eov possesses is in the Satan's hand, excluding Eov himself. It is very clear that the Satan is not independent, and he's not an independent agent. Everything is orchestrated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the angels can plead their case to Hashem, and Hashem responds. If you look carefully, a lot of the language and ideas are reminiscent of the Akedah and Avraham. Avraham makes a party when Yitzchak is born. Avraham is apprised of the test in advance, and he has to participate volitionally. Avraham is proactive. But Eov will be reactive. It happens as a surprise to Eov, and Eov responds. Are these different levels of faith, with Avraham being the highest level? Is this willing proactiveness to do God's will, the Akedah, the highest level of faith in adversity? Avraham makes a party when Yitzchak is born. Eov's children also make parties, but are they randomly partying with no goal in mind? In both, we see the phrase, Al tishlach, do not extend your hand. Here, the Satan is told not to extend his hand to Eov himself. In the Akedah, Avraham is told not to put his hand on Yitzchak, not to extend his hand and harm Yitzchak. Here with Eov, we begin with the assumption that Eov is God-fearing, and the test is to prove it. To whom? To Eov? To the Satan? To God? The Mefarshim debate the audience of the Akedah as well. Was it to prove Avraham's faith to the world, to himself, to future generations? The Satan is true to his mission. A feast day arrives. All of Eov's children are partying and they're killed by natural disaster. His livestock is all taken by a marauding horde and a consuming fire that also murdered all the servants. Eov is informed about all these catastrophes by subsequent messengers coming one on the heels of the other. When Eov hears these horrifying missives, he gets up and rents his cloak and pulls out his hair in mourning and drops to the ground and prostrates himself and proclaims in some of the most famous words of bereavement in the Tanakh, Arom yatzati mi beten imi, ve'arom ashuv shama, Hashem natan v'Hashem lakach, yihi shem Hashem mevorach. I came out naked from my mother's womb, and naked I will return there. God gives and God takes away. May the name of God be blessed. And despite all this, Eov does not sin or besmirch Hashem. So it seems that Eov passes the test, and we could have ended Sefer Eov here. But in chapter 2 in Perek Bet, the heavenly tribunal reconvenes, and the initial conversation is identical to Perek Aleph. The Satan is wandering around the world, and Hashem asks, did you see my servant Eov? Despite everything that you did to him, he maintains his sincerity. And you, Satan, misled me to torture him for naught, but to siteni bo levalochinam. The same words that Satan used to describe Eov's devotion to God, chinam, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses it in arguing with the Satan. So Hashem is criticizing the Satan for pushing him to allow Eov to be destroyed for no reason. So the Satan is proven wrong. End of story. No. The Satan responds, Or ba'ad or, v'chol asher la'ish yiten ba'ad nafsho. Flesh for flesh, whatever a person has, he will give for his life. If you torture him, touch him, send your hand to him, again, shlach nayatcha, surely he will curse you to your face. And here again, Hashem gives Eov into the Satan's hands with explicit instructions again. You can do whatever you want to Eov, but you have to spare his life. And what does the Satan do? When the Satan leaves HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, Eov is smitten with an extreme case of boils from his feet to his head. And Eov takes a pot shard to relieve the discomfort by scratching and sitting in the dust. Is this true that people only care about themselves? Adam karov la'atzmo, a person is close to himself. His children, his possessions were all destroyed, and he was responding rationally. And now that he is suffering, we're going to see that his tone will slowly change. But is it because now he's first personally affected? Or does it take time for a tragedy to fully be grasped? His wife sees he is so uncomfortable, she suggests, Otcha machazik betumatecha? Barech Elokim v'met. Are you still upholding your sincerity? Curse God and die. And Eov answers her, You're being irreverent and impious. Gamet hatov nekabel me'eta Elokim, ve'et hara lo nekabel? Should we only accept the good from God, but not the bad? Which is fascinating, because the Satan said, Oh, you're treating him well, and that's why he's believing in Hashem. Treat him poorly and see what happens. And now Eov is proving, even if you treat him poorly, right, he's accepting the bad. He's accepting the good and the bad. Also, it's interesting, we know the wife survived. And it's interesting as well that she's reiterating the words of the Satan here on earth. The Satan said, Barech Elokim v'mot. He's going to curse you. That's what the wife says. Curse God. That should be your answer. And you'll get out of this. And Eov responds furiously. Eov states that we have to accept everything from God, everything God throws our way, the good and the bad. It would be hypocritical, says Eov, to thank God only for the good things, but curse God for the bad. And Eov refuses to take the easy way out and end it all with cursing God. The Ramban explains that Eov's wife is representing here very succinctly the notion of worshiping Hashem al menat lekabel pras. But Eov's answer is that he worships God because it's the right thing to do, regardless of reward. So far, Eov is able to succeed in his trial. In Perek Yud, it ends with the phrase, Bechol zot lo chata Eov bisfatav. Eov did not sin with his lips. Eov did not say anything against God, despite his wife's provocations. Rashi comments that Eov did not sin with his lips, but he sinned in his heart. Eov was angry with Hashem, even though Eov does not express it yet. Ibn Ezra comments that this is foreshadowing that soon Eov will also sin with his lips and articulate his anger towards God, towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When Eov's friends hear the tragedy that befell him, they come to empathize and they shake their heads, lanudbo, to comfort him, lanachamo. Rashi explains that Re'av, friends here, really means Ohavav. These friends originally really loved him and cared about him, and that's why they came. The three friends are Eliphaz HaTemani, Bildad HaShuchi, and Tzofar HaNa'amati. When they raise their eyes from afar and gaze upon Eov, they're shocked. They join in his avelut, in his mourning. They cry, they rent their garments and throw dirt on their heads. They sit shiva with him for the 7 days and seven nights, and no one speaks to him or opens their mouth. What can they say? They see his pain is so great. And after 7 days, Eov curses the day he was born. So for 7 days, everyone is silent. Eov and the friends. But on the seventh day, Eov curses the day he was born, and he doesn't want the heavens or the stars or anything to remember that day. And he wishes that his mother's womb was closed and he didn't come out into this earth. He is so upset, so tormented, and is suffering so. What are the friends going to answer? Eliphaz, the first friend, responds, and the word is Vayan, responding to Eov. Hanisa davar elecha tilae ve'atzor b'milim miyuchal? Eliphaz cautiously says that he will try to speak to Eov, but he doesn't know if Eov will listen to him. But he can't stop his words from pouring out, because he must respond to Eov's tirade, cursing his life and the day he was born. This is how Ibn Ezra and Ramban understand this, that Eliphaz feels he must respond, even though it will tire and anguish Eov. Being silent would imply that he agrees with Eov's views that death is better than life, and it's better if you were not born. But also, Eov is saying, I am blameless. God is punishing me unjustly. So when Eliphaz opens his mouth and he says, oh, but you used to comfort all these people when they had tragedies in the same way I'm going to comfort you. But now when the tragedy is yours, you're all of a sudden questioning God. You were the one, Rashi said, who would always go to people and give them comfort. And when a crisis befalls you, you crumble so quickly and you're upset about being born and you're angry at HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Eliphaz continues his response. Hinei sarta rabim v'yadayim rafot t'chazek. Koshel yikimun milecha uvirkayim korot t'ametz. Ki ata tavo elecha v'tele, tiga adecha v'tibahel, halo yiratcha kislatecha. Tikvatcha v'tom derachecha. You chastised so many people and strengthened weak hands. Your words would pick up the stumbler and you braced faltering knees. But now when it comes to you, you are bewildered. Your anger towards God proves the inadequacy of your original fear of heaven. And Rashi explains, because you were the one who defended people when things happened, and you said there is divine justice, and now you're saying there's no divine justice, then that is a big question. How can you go from one end to the other just because it's happening to you? It's because you're frightened and you're confused. So obviously, Rashi says, Eliphaz is saying that your original fear of heaven was foolishness and not substantive. Because now when it's touching you, you're not responding in the same way, defending Hashem and accepting his actions. in positions where people give advice and guidance, a rabbi, a teacher, a mentor, a friend, a psychologist, it's always easier when you are removed from the issue. So you can be very philosophical and clinical. But now that the shoe is on the other foot and Eov is suffering, Eliphaz says that Eov does not understand all the platitudes and succor he was doling out before, which means now that the shoe is on the other foot, is Eov consistent or is he being a hypocrite? Or is it difficult when it comes to you to answer in a rational and believing way? These are very harsh words of Eliphaz. He's pretty much telling Eov that he's a hypocrite. He's definitely not giving nechama, comfort. The friends were there to give comfort, consolation. Imagine you're sitting Shiva, and the people who come start giving you musar and arguing about your reaction to your tragedy. They start to philosophize and explain why this tragedy is happening to you. Especially if it's a great tragedy, like Eov experienced, it's even harder to bear. And Eliphaz still gives the classical response about divine justice and order in the world. He begins, Zechorna mihu naki avad. Have you ever seen an innocent person and an upright person destroyed? Eliphaz is pretty much saying, he's never seen the wicked succeed and the good suffer. The world is run by divine justice. Eliphaz says the wicked always get punishment and the good are always successful. So obviously, Eov, because you are being punished for sin and you're suffering, it has to be that you're being punished for sin. You're suffering because you're being punished for sin. It can't be that such a profound torment is random and not deserved. This flies in the face of the opening chapters that we spoke about. We know it's a trial. But those in the Sefer don't know that. So instead of the friends trying to comfort Eov and trying to give nechama, they just accuse him and say, this is your fault. You must be evil. And that's why all these evils have come to you and suffering and torment. The other friends, Bildad and Sofar as well, state very clearly that there is only punishment if there is a crime, and that Hashem never punishes the innocent. Ergo, Eov must have sinned terribly. They don't agree with the view of tzaddik viralo rasha v'tovlo, that sometimes evil can befall a tzaddik, and sometimes rashaim do well in this world. They keep on telling him he must have sinned. And Eov, over and over again, responds that he is innocent, that he is blameless. Not that he's completely blameless, but that clearly he didn't do enough sins to really deserve this kind of punishment. And that he wants a dialogue with Hashem to discuss this matter, but Hashem is not answering him. Eov is very disappointed with his friends, and he keeps on criticizing them and say, what do you know about the world? Who told you? Are you God that you know all the answers, that you know why I'm suffering and that it's a punishment for sin? I am not wicked. I do not deserve this punishment. But the friends keep on repeating that. Harold Kushner, in his book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, writes, and I'm kind of paraphrasing a little, the friends really start out truly wanting to comfort Eov and make him feel better. They try to reassure him by quoting all the maxims of faith and confidence on which they and Eov alike were raised. They want to comfort Eov by telling him that the world, in fact, makes sense and is not chaotic. But the only way they can make sense of the world is to decide that he deserves his suffering. This is an insult to the bereaved and the sufferer to tell them, you deserve this. But it's hard for the friends to say anything else. The friends want to believe in God's goodness and power. So if Eov is innocent, then Hashem is guilty of making an innocent man suffer. So it's easier to believe that Eov is not good. And also, when we're all involved in this kind of suffering, the friends, as we see in the book, are also not objective, because their emotions are mixed with the feeling of guilt and relief that these misfortunes befell Eov and not them. The German psychological term Schadenfreude is the reaction of relief when something bad happens to someone else instead of us. It could have been me is our first reaction all the time. A friend get cancer. It could have been me. Their child died. It could have been me. They had a miscarriage. Their grandchild died. Their child was in an accident. A friend. Someone got coronavirus and passed away. We think, oh, wow, that could have been me. Ah, that's our initial response. But then we silence it in our head by saying, no, that's not true. There's a reason why it happened to them and not me. And blaming the victim makes evil seem not so irrational. Instead of blaming the evil for being irrational, we blame the victim. Oh, they must have deserved it. Eov is not willing to keep the world theologically neat and admit that he is a villain to make the friends feel better. Eov is sure that even though he is not perfect, he is not a villain, and he does not deserve this punishment. Definitely not worse than his friends, to lose his children, his wealth, and health, while others keep all those things. Eov wishes there was an umpire to mediate between him and God, and that God would come, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would come and reveal himself to him and explain his tragedies. What are the views on Eov of Rashi and Rambam? What do they say about Sefer Eov? Could Eov argue with Hashem? Is he really arguing? What is his view? Does he feel alienated? Does he not believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Or the fact that he keeps on arguing shows that he believes so strongly in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he wants HaKadosh Baruch Hu to answer him. Rashi, especially in Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Tedvav, Hein Yikteleni Lo Ayachel. Though he shall slay me, I will or will not. It's Kri and Chtiv, but the way we read it is, I will, right? I will always yearn to God. Hein Yikteleni Lo Ayachel. Even though he slay me, I will still yearn for him. But I will justify my ways before him. That's the pasuk. How does Rashi explain this pasuk? Rashi adds on these words to Hein Yikteleni Lo Ayachel. He also adds, and I shall not separate myself from him and shall always trust in him, which means even though I'm arguing with God and I accept this suffering, I will not separate myself, no matter how much Hashem makes me suffer, and I will always have this trust. That's an unbelievable level, according to Rashi, that Eov has, which means no matter how much suffering, instead of saying, I reject God, I reject HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why was I chosen to have this terrible disease? Rashi is saying that Eov continues and wants to build up his trust. And he does not want to separate himself from Hashem and will always trust in him. And therefore, says Rashi, there is no transgression or rebellion in Eov's words. On the next pasuk, Tet Zayin, Gam hu li li Yeshua, ki lo lefanav chanef yavo. He will also be my salvation. But a hypocrite can't come before him. And Rashi comments, as I am holy with him, so is God's salvation for me. What does that mean? I'm honest. I'm complaining. But I have my emunah HaKadosh Baruch Hu complete. Even though I'm crying out, even though I'm complaining because terrible things are happening, but I have a full emunah, and this is not because I'm rebelling against God. I just want an answer. I want to feel the closeness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rashi does not state that Eov's faith was perfect. It wasn't perfect in some ways. And sometimes Rashi says he does complain too forcefully. Eov is not perfect, but he's only human, says Rashi. Yet overall, Rashi's view of Eov is that he was yearning for God. He was close to God, and his words come from a place of closeness. Rashi views Eov as a good person overall who does not deserve the abuse of the friends. Rashi sees Eov as a man of faith Rashi sides with Eov versus the friends and their assumptions that Eov must have sinned, and he criticizes their harshness. However, Rashi, commenting on Perek Lamed Gimel, in the end, says that Avram Avinu was a person of perfect faith because he was unquestioning of God. So Rashi clearly places Avram Avinu on a higher level. Overall, but not all, but overall, most of the Mefarshim, especially from the medieval time period, see Eov in the traditional image of a pious and faithful person. Rav Yosef Kara, a student contemporary, Talmid Chaver of Rashi, also has a similar view of Eov. Eov had doubts, but he was never rebelling against God. What about the Rambam? The Rambam's views are found in Moreh Nevuchim, Chelek Gimel, 21 to 23, Kaf Aleph to Kaf Gimel. And Rambam states, the general view of the friends is that those who act well will receive reward, and those who act wickedly are punished. Crime and punishment. You do a crime, you get a punishment. That's it. But each friend teaches a little bit of a more specific lesson. In the Rambam's view, Bildad's addition to the main argument is the argument of gemul, recompense. The more you suffer, if you don't deserve all of it, because you sin, you will be paid back gloriously in the end of your life. Eliphaz, if you sin, you get punishment. Sofar adds that God does not have to reason to man what he does. God does what he does because he's all powerful. And that's it. He doesn't have to answer to man. Elihu, who will be the last one to answer Eov, according to Rambam, teaches that true wisdom and knowledge is attained only when man realizes and acknowledges that Hashem's knowledge is very different from our own. Sofar said that Hashem could do whatever he wants because he's all powerful. That's not what Elihu says, according to Rambam. Elihu says that God's knowledge is different from ours, which is Rambam's view about God's knowledge. It's just on a whole separate level from what we know. It's a different level, and providence and actions are not like man, so man cannot evaluate God on any level. Once man knows this, that he cannot fathom God, then we can love God and love HaKadosh Baruch Hu without the worry of the philosophical dilemma of divine providence, because we just don't know how Hashem rules the world and what is God's knowledge and how he acts and how does free will work. And therefore, once we have no way to assess that, we don't care to delve on that all the time, the idea of divine justice. We just know God is just. It's beyond our comprehension. And it is proven by the Pasuk in Yeshayahu in Perek Nunhei, Psukim Chet Tetet, chapter 55, verses 8 to 9. Ki lo machshvotai machshvoteichem, velo darkeichem drachai ne'um Hashem. Ki gavhu shamayim me'aretz, ken gavhu drachai midarkechem, machshvotai mimachshvoteichem. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, says Hashem. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. We just read this in shul today together, because this is what we read on the fast days at Mincha. Another interesting view of the Rambam is that Eov is called Tam v'yashar yirei Elokim v'sar meira, wholesome, upright, God-fearing, and shunning evil. However, he was never called knowledgeable. And the Rambam says, following the Agadah, Midrashic, rabbinic interpretation, that the Satan in this story is really the Yetzer Hara. And what Rambam is saying is that when Eov was in pain and only knew God through accepted ideas, but not independent knowledge, he was troubled by the injustices of life because he truly didn't understand Hashem, and his Yetzer Hara was undermining his thoughts. But once Elihu was able to teach Eov to understand the inability to even to try to understand Hashem, Eov was ready for the revelation that we're going to speak about in a moment that comes in the end of the Sefer. And that's why Eov, from the beginning of the Sefer to the end of the Sefer, is transformed from, as we talk about him, a Yirei Elokim, one who fears God, to one who becomes an Ohev Elokim, an Ohev Hashem, one who loves God. What is religious experience? Is Eov an anomaly? That it's turbulent and turmoil, and we argue and we ask questions. The Rav says, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik Zecher Tzadik Levracha, explained that the religious experience was never a smooth one. In his Isha Halacha, Halachic Man, the Rav states in note 4 that the religious consciousness is in man's experience, which is most profound and most elevated, which penetrates to the very depths and ascends to the very heights, is not simple and comfortable. On the contrary, it's exceptionally complex and rigorous and torturous. Where you find its complexity, there you find its greatness. The religious experience from beginning to end is antinomic and antithetical. Religion is not a refuge of grace and mercy for the despondent and desperate, an enchanted stream for the crushed spirits, but it's a raging, clamorous torrent of man's consciousness with all its crises, pangs, and torments. Religious life is not a smooth sail on a calm sea. It can be clamorous and tormented, as we know. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Zichrono Livracha, suggests that we invert the classical way that we understand the Book of Eov. More significantly is that the main idea of this Sefer and Tanakh in general is the faith that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in man. Not, oh, we're testing Hashem, but all of Tanakh is to say amazing how much faith in Emuna people, humans, have in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's amazing faith that Hashem has in man, that he gave us free will to act in this world and change so many things and have a huge influence and be a junior partner to God. Faith does not mean certainty. It's the courage to live with uncertainty. And Eov has to have that faith, uncertain, unknowing of what is going on. But he has that faith, and it has to be with him even in times of difficulty. It does not mean that we have answers. We don't have the answers many times. And it takes courage to live with uncertainty. And it means having the courage to ask questions and not let things slide. To ask the questions, be involved, be immersed in what it means to be a religious person. Rabbi Sacks quotes a very interesting Sifrei. The Sifrei, commenting on Devarim, Lamed Bet, Pasuk Dalid, Hatsur Tamim Pa'alo, Ki Kol Drachav Mishpat, El Emuna Ve'en Avel, Tzadik V'yasharhu, the rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are just. A just God of faith without iniquity, righteous and fair is he. What is the Sifrei comment on these beautiful psukim in Devarim? A God of faith? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu had faith in the universe and created it. And who's the center of the universe? Man. Hashem had faith in us to create the world and put it in our safekeeping. So let's finish Eov. So does Hashem come and answer Eov and tell him why he's going through this suffering? What is Hashem's answer? Hashem comes out of the Sa'arai, comes out of the whirlwind, and he says, Mize machshich eitza b'milin b'lidat, ezorna ka gever chalatzecha, ve'eshalcha v'hodieni, eifo hayita, b'yesodi aretz, hagedin yadata bina, misam meimadea ki teda, o minata alea kav. What is happening in the last prakim? When Hashem answers Eov from the Se'ara, from the tempest, he shouts out to Eov, who is this who gives dark counsel with words without knowledge? Gird your loins like a man, and I will ask you, where were you when I founded the earth? When I placed its measures, when the morning stars sing together, when the sea is shut up, and when there's rain, did you command morning? What Hashem is saying to Eov is, I created the world and I know everything about the world. Who are you? What do you know? Hashem doesn't tell, oh, that it was really a test. Hashem doesn't give him any answers about divine justice and what is the secret to the universe. So we would expect after several prakim of that Eov would say, it's not a good answer. You didn't answer me. But what is Eov's response? Remember, Eov is arguing with Hashem for 30 prakim in Sefer Eov. So what is Hashem's answer? What do you know about the world? And Eov's response to Hashem, right? Just like he answers all the friends, he's answering a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Does he say, like he says to the friends, ah, this is not a comfort. You're not answering the question. His answer to a Kodesh Baruch Hu is, Vayan Eov et Hashem vayomar. This is in Eov Perek Membet 42. Yadati ki kol tuchal, v'lo yibatzer mimcha mizima. Mize ma'ali meitza blidat. Lacheni gadeti v'lo avin, niflaot mimeni v'lo eda. Shmana v'anochi adaber, eshalcha v'hodieni, lishmoa o l'shema ozen shmaticha, ata eini ra'atcha, al ken emas v'nichamti al afar v'efer. What is Eov answering? And first I'm going to answer in the words of Eov, just in the English translation. I knew that you can do everything and no design is restrained from you, which means Eov is saying, I knew you created the world. The whole time I knew you were the creator and all powerful. And how do I look at myself now? Who is this who hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I told, but I did not understand. They are hidden from me and I did not know. You're right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I was speaking without knowledge. I was spewing. I was just saying things, but I really didn't know what I was saying. I was trying to understand. That's why I was lashing out. Hearken now and I will speak. I will ask and you inform me. The whole time I'm saying, Hashem, I want to ask you the questions. I want to ask and I want you to answer me. And now Hashem has come and answered him. But remember, the content was not the answer of why he's suffering. The content was that God is all powerful and he has his reasons for doing things, but man doesn't know. And Eov accepts that because what Eov is saying, I have heard you. And by hearing you and seeing you, that has given me comfort. Therefore, I despise my life. And I will be consoled on dust and ashes. Eov was searching for God, to feel God, to know that he is there listening to his plight, not necessarily to get all the answers of why, but to know that God is running the world. Eov accepts that there is no answer, but he is consoled by hearing and seeing God. We might not see and hear God in the usual sense, but we can develop that sensitivity to feel God, to feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu in everything that we do, in everything that we experience, the good and the bad. The answer to Eov was feeling and knowing that God cared about him and that God did not abandon him in any way. Maybe that's what we're looking for, that no matter how bad things are, God is with us, caring about us, even if we do not understand his ways. The book of Eov is letting us know that we can cry out to Hashem and feel his presence to console us in our time of suffering.